Howdy, folks, and welcome to the Dead Pit Revival Podcast. I am the Creepy Kentuckian. We wanted to thank you guys for checking out the podcast audio. If you like what you hear on this show, please consider checking us out on Patreon, deadpitonpatreon.com. Thousands of hours of horror talk content. The entire library of the Dead Pit radio shows from 2005 onwards. Fan commentaries. Your occult podcast, all of the midweek / MySpace shows, and more, including a weekly podcast guaranteed every week. It's Patreon's MWO podcast. Tons of stuff on Patreon. So if you like what you hear on this show, consider starting on Patreon with us. The tiers are only $1, and they go all the way up to the baller and shot collar tier. They get you everything, plus you get to request content from the Creepy Kentuckian and Uncle Bill, show topics, whatever you want to do. You know, reviews, show topics, all that good stuff. So, thank you guys once again, and enjoy the show. Keep it creepy.
We're going to slice your tits off.
Yeah, I'm going to slice and dice and kill everything. Whatever it said.
Yeah. I'm going to kill everybody.
I'm going to kill every damn thing that moves.
So the Cruel Summer / back week 4, I think. So this will technically be our, we're going through our, okay, got to fix it. Got to make it look professional. Now, come on. 8. We're going to go through 7 and 8 of the summer, and I think we're rocking and rolling doing these through, when does summer end technically? I think it's September, but to me it ends in August.
It ends in September, if you will.
But we're going to say August for this show, because September, I'm already thinking the fall.
Yeah, September's when I usually start listening to, like, the Misfits and shit, getting ready for Halloween, so...
Yeah, wake me up when September ends, though, because Rocktober is just around, you know, the corner to September. But tonight, very special night. We've got some cool ones we're taking a look at. Hardcore slasher fans are going to get a kick out of this because these are two, and I looked it up. Never, ever, ever talked about these movies in any sort of detail at all, me and you, ever.
Yep, I know for a fact that we never talked about the first one because I've never even seen the first damn one. And I'm glad that I watched it, though. We'll get into that in detail. But The Mutilator is a fucking classic. And yeah. Every time I watch that movie, it gets like better and better because it's so goofy and everything. It's like a bunch of the leads in the movie talk like us, which is great.
Right. Like, yeah, shot in North Kakalaki, which is too awful far from where we're at. But yeah, it's weird that, you know, we did interview Buddy Cooper, but we never actually reviewed the movie. And a funny story behind that, we'll talk about it when we talk about the movie. But tons of people in our chat already. We're going to do a little bit of a roll call here, and then we'll get rocking and rolling and kick it off with Ken Hughes. No relation to Steve Hughes and his movie Night School. That'll be the first one we'll talk about. Matthew Black, Vanderhoff, Jeffrey DeShore, Antonis Andriotis, Justin Smith, Brian Oblivion, Noah Sudretti. Is he French? I don't know. Sudretti? Is that how you pronounce it?
Sure.
Or is it Sudret?
But if it's Sodre, that's really French.
Noah Sodre. Noah Sodre. Is Noah a French name? Or where did the name Noah originate? I've got a little nephew named Noah. I know, but what country? What country did it come from?
Jesus.
Palestine.
Sure. Came from the country of Jesus, Nazareth.
Witch Hunter. Justin Marino, Tape Rot Video. You may have been right on that a little bit, but Uncle Bill was the one that was originally late, and he said, hey, I'll be about 10 minutes late. And then I was like, yeah, good. I'm going to go take a shit in the meantime.
That Jackson Jack comment is fucking brutal.
Subjective Perspective Collective. Dirk is in the house. Todd Bridges, Mozart's Ghost, Scratch Bueno, Adrian James, Jack Owen, Chris Boyd, what is going on, man? The Mayor, Fall Break, yes. Well, I watched the Fall Break cut. And we'll, there's a lot of fun little things to talk about with, we're not talking about anything lately that's happened involved somebody getting shot in the ear.
No.
That wouldn't be professional. I'm glad that he didn't die, though. I'll say that. I'll at least say that. I have to say that. It'd make me look bad if I didn't say that.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he survived.
I don't want anybody to die.
Right.
I'll just say that.
Yeah. Even an old cobweb farting millionaire that we're not big fans of, but I'm glad he didn't die.
Glad he's all right.
So we're going to go ahead and kick it off, man, because I wasn't super familiar with this first movie either. And you said that, was this the first time you watched this movie recently?
Yeah.
Night School?
Yeah.
1981.
I may have seen it one time before, but I barely remembered if I do.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, like I said, possibly, but it was a long, long time ago. And I watched it recently again for the first time. Possibly ever, but at least in decades. And I was kind of pleasantly surprised with this one.
Same.
And this was Uncle Bill's choice for this week. But yeah, I mean, we're at Night School from 1981. Definitely the peak of those early 80s slasher movies started. You know, the amazing success with Friday the 13th. And then 1981 may have been the biggest year of slashers ever. Right, Uncle Boo.
1981 would have been, I mean, yeah, that's kind of apex, like right after Friday the 13th comes out, Halloween's already out, like all of the slasher craze is beginning to start. This is a weird movie that does not really fall into those conventions, though. This is not really a slasher film. I mean, it is a slasher film, but it's, to me, like a giallo. But there's one important piece missing to make it a giallo, I think. That's why I don't think people call it that. I mean, you've got the black glove killer aspect of it. You've got, you know, the whodunit aspect of it. But most every giallo has this plot convention where at the beginning of the movie, somebody sees something and they know who the killer is, but they can't remember who it is for some reason, or they see something, or they hear something, or there's something about, and they know who the killer is, but they can't remember it. That's normally like a part
of it. But it all comes back to them towards the end of the movie.
By the end of the movie.
Something happens and it clicks. And like, oh.
That's not the case here. Like, it's just, all the other parts are there except for that piece. But, so technically, I guess it is a slasher film more than anything else. It's the story of Rachel Ward, who is insane. Like, the way that she looks at this movie is insane, by the way. This is her first film, I think. And starts out with, like, you're at this playground after hours for this school, and this teacher is kind of just sitting around and minding her business, and then she is killed by this off-screen killer that you don't see on like a merry-go-round. No, merry-go-round, mm-hmm. Is that right? Yeah. And, like, it's pretty cool because he spins it, like, as fast
as he can.
Do
merry-go-rounds exist anymore?
I don't think so.
I don't think they do.
I think they exist.
Teeter-totters and or seesaws.
They're probably
or
afraid that, like, kids will get hurt on them and stuff. But anyway, all of this takes place around this same school. And the main characters of the film are Rachel Ward and this professor who Rachel Ward is having an affair with. And he's also having an affair with, like, all of his students. And most of the people
He must have a soup can dick or something, because all the girls want the professor.
Yeah, it's really weird because he does not look like anybody that anybody would give a shit about. Like, I mean, he's not, you know, a typical leading man style person. But so, yeah, here's the scene with the merry-go-round. And I love that scene, but the way that he did that, where the killer kind of spins her around and then, like, just holds the knife out and she keeps getting cut by it until he finally, like, whacks her head off. So that's the big plot of the film, though, is that this killer decapitates all of his victims and then puts their head somewhere in water. And
Got a fixation on heads.
Yeah. On heads, yeah.
And it's pretty accurate for a real life serial killer. I mean, they keep trophies, or they're fascinated by one part of the human anatomy. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. I will also say that the killer in this looks exactly like the killer in Massimo Delamano, which we reviewed a bunch of his films for the Tour of Italy show, in one of his films, which was, I'm trying to remember which one it was. It wasn't Solange. It was What Have They Done to Your Daughters? It's the same outfit and everything. Like, it looks exactly the same. They're both dressed like bikers with the helmets on and shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Rachel Ward, though, she was also in, what was that? The Final Terror. She was in that one. That one came out a year or two after this. And the movie that I remember most from was an HBO movie that is long out of print called Fortress. That's a freaking killer movie, man. I'd love to see somebody do that. But this movie's actually really good too. This was her debut performance in a feature film. And you get to see the good, baby, with good. I enjoy seeing the good. Let me tell you something. They're good. They're good, good. Uncle B, good, good.
Mm-mm. Nice to see. Hello, Rachel Ward. What are you doing?
Is Rachel Ward Australian, or is she from, like...
Yeah, I think she's Australian.
Rachel Ward.
That's how she really... Let me kill it. That's how she talked. They're doing an interview with her, and she's like,
well, you know, this movie was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed me co-star. Oh, I had not a good time watching this and playing in this movie, dude.
This was like a Warner... Warner Brothers movie, though, is interesting. Like a big budget. Well, I don't know if it was a huge budget, but Warner Brothers released it and has only done like very... And we were talking to Felcher about this a few days ago on the show that we did with him. They've only done like the Warner Archive editions of these this movie. And it would be cool to have like a big like special edition of this, because there's some interesting little tidbits in this movie too. Brad Fidel does the music for this, who would become famous for the Terminator theme primarily. I think he did a bunch of other stuff too, but I remember him from Terminator.
Most people do, yeah.
And Ken Hughes.
Didn't Brad Fidel also do something in Fright Night?
That may have been Brad Fidel too. I'm not really
sure. I swear I think he did the main theme, you know, that do 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 do.
Somebody in the chat will know. What else? Yeah, Fright Night. Goblin Zinc's got it.
Yeah.
So Brad Fidel, this was one of his, I don't know if it was his first movie, but one of his early movies. This was 1981. And Terminator was what, 84?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, this, he hasn't done anything in a while either, and I think he's still alive. So, Ken Hughes, though, is like, this is his last directorial movie, and this guy made movies like back in like the...
Yeah, when I...
Long time ago.
When I looked up his thing, he's like making movies in the 1800s. I'm just kidding. But, it, I mean, it's almost like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So just to walk you through the movie a little bit though, like basically Rachel Ward gets pregnant and she wants to keep the baby, and the professor that she is seeing, I think his name is Professor Merritt or something to that effect, does not want to necessarily keep the baby because he's having an affair with a bunch of his students. And there is There is a Dean character in the movie. This is one of the more bizarre parts about this movie, by the way. Right.
She's an angry lesbian.
She's an angry feminist lesbian who like also befriends all of the people, all of the students in this school, takes them home and lets them live with her, and then like seduces them, which happens towards the end of the film. But the whole movie basically centers around Rachel Ward and this pregnancy and this relationship. And then while she's
this guy's a womanizer though. Like he did.
Yeah.
He acts like he likes her, but he's more just about dispensing these Peter juice to like the entire campus.
Right. It's like a water hose. He just wants to spray everybody with it.
He just wants to share the love.
Yeah. On a hot August day.
Yeah. And yeah, the performance by Rachel Ward, I thought was really good. I think her character's name was Eleanor. In it,
Eleanor Rigby sits in the church.
And not only is the professor like a sex addict, he's also a very weird motherfucker too, and has weird fetishes. There's something going on in the shower with him. I don't know what that was. Like it.
I'm still okay. Yeah, I forgot about that. You brought up that's a killer point. So there's a scene that I suppose that is supposed to be erotic and is like the least thing from being erotic, because it's a scene where they're taking a shower together, which is great for Rachel. You know, you get to see Rachel, everything on Rachel Ward, but he's got something. And I got to imagine it's like ground up berries or something. I don't know what the fuck it is, but it looks like period blood or something that he's just smearing all over her face and like body and stuff, and letting it like, you know, get washed off and kissing her with it. And I'm like, it looks really weird. It definitely is supposed to resemble blood.
Yeah. And then like, evidently that's getting him off. So they're throwing the red herring thing. They make you think too hard that it's the professor that's killing these people. So like, pretty much instantly you're like, no, it couldn't be him.
Yeah. There's a scene in it where a cop comes in and he's convinced that like, you know, that he's the one that's doing it, because the professor has this like fascination with old tribal beheadings and this whole thing about tribes that would kill people and then behead them and put their head in water to cleanse them of like evil spirits. So he's convinced that the professor, because he, you know, is fascinated with this and studies it and everything, is the one behind all the killings. But there's at least three separate death set pieces in this movie that are outstandingly well done. I think the first one is the merry-go-round, which is what kicks off the movie. The second one is probably my favorite, which is the one that happens in the
restaurant tank.
No, the fish tank, where this one of her friends works at this like aquarium, and she's responsible for feeding the fish and everything like that. She gets out and the killer stalks her down and then like beheads her and drops her head into this aquarium tank, and it floats to the bottom. I don't know how they got this to happen, but it's killer. It floats to the bottom of the thing, and then a big turtle that's there starts like biting it. Like, I guess they put something on it to attract like the turtle, but the turtle's like biting the head, like taking pieces of it off. There's that scene. And then there's the restaurant scene, which is really, really great too, with like, there's a recurring character in it that's just kind of like this waitress that works at this restaurant who's like trying to help her out, trying to help Rachel Ward's character out. And he stalks her. There's a great scene too. And I don't know if you noticed this, but this happens in the film. And then the director of this is really good because he switches this up. So cuts her head off in the restaurant, and you know it's in that restaurant, but there's a scene.
You don't know where.
Yeah. There's a scene after that where two guys come in, and the guy who owns the restaurant comes in, and he's getting ready to cook lunch for them. And they want
beef stew.
And so he keeps opening these cabinets, looking in the refrigerator, looking in the stew, and none of it's the head. Like, they're all like, he goes through all these different things, and you keep waiting for the head to show up because you know it's in there, right? Like,
right.
And you know, like, that's going to be a part of it. And it never does. Like, it never shows up until like the very end of the scene. It's not in the stew or anything like that. And then later on, there's another scene that's similar to it where you're like, all right, well, are they going to do the same thing where like this person keeps checking everything and that, where it shows up immediately. So it completely like subverts your expectations about like what's going to happen. And I like it when people like pay attention to that.
Yeah. He's pouring out like one canister of stew into this other pot, and you're expecting
like 5 minutes of that. Yeah.
And you're waiting. You're like, oh God, that head's going to come out of there. But no, I mean, there are some scenes in it that are really effective. And the director of this, now, this is something that I looked up because the guy directed Casino Royale, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in the 60s. It's just odd. Like, he didn't really do a whole lot after the early to mid 70s. And then Night School was the last movie that he did. And then he lived another 20 years. He passed away in 2001 at the age of 79. But yeah, I thought this was a pretty effective movie. I was kind of surprised by this. Now, see if you thought this though too. The look of the movie, it looked like a TV movie almost.
Yeah,
it played it like did. A TV movie.
It did, yeah.
But it wasn't. It wasn't a TV movie at all. It came out in theaters and everything. But yeah, I don't know if it was like the way it was filmed and the music or what, but yeah, I think the music kind of made it feel like a early 80s TV movie.
It definitely looked like that too. And also, this is another movie, by the way, we were just last week talking about, you know, death screams, and there's a particular character in that movie who, you know, is, what's the word you want to say here? Special. And then in this movie, there's a character that just kind of is a peeping Tom that's clearly like messed up in the head too, that just kind of walks around, and that's all he does is like he just tries to see different women naked through their windows, and he's always like, you know,
I'd be like him. I'd be like eyeballing Rachel Ward and seeing where the hell she goes.
Yeah. And that's kind of what he does in one particular scene. But the best part about this movie, other than the killer and the death set pieces and all that they've got, is the chemistry between the cops, which is really good. And that's actually what ends the movie, oddly enough, is the scene between the two of them. But they're really, really good together. You got one that's like the serious cop and one that's like the joke, kind of jokester cop or whatever, like that busting his balls all the time. And I was surprised at how well that they actually did together.
I was looking up Rachel Ward though, to see if she's done anything as of late. The last movie that she did, she played Peter's mother in the Peter Rabbit movie from 2018. That was the last movie that she was.
Jesus.
Yeah. Poor old Rachel Ward. She's actually almost 70 years old at this point. Wow.
She's great in this movie, though. Much better than somebody that should be in like a first time movie.
Yeah. Yeah. She does a fantastic job. For anybody that's seen the ending of the movie, it's very effective. And I think they play the switcheroo in this, and we might as well talk about it because spoiler alert, if anybody has any,
I'd say the majority of people have probably not seen this movie. So spoiler alert, big time on this. Cause right. The ending is great, and we're going to probably talk about it right now and spoil it completely. So,
yeah. So fast forward or mute it for the next 2 minutes and we'll be done. But so, I think when I said switcheroo, that it was clearly a man in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Clearly. And then gradually they switch it. And then towards the end of the movie in that last scene with the masked killer and everything, you could tell it was a woman.
Oh yeah. You could tell.
Yeah.
You know, when I knew who it was, and I swear to God, this is true, is there's a scene of like them walking up a fire escape or something like that. And I'm like, that's a woman's ass.
Yeah.
There's just no way.
But, anyway, like, of course, it's Rachel Ward. She is going after all of the females that the professor is, having an affair with, quite a bit of them, actually.
Yeah.
She's protecting their family and all this, and the baby that she's going to have in this. And then there is kind of a twist ending to that. So we won't give that part away, but,
there's actually another twist after that, all that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And, actually, really that, and that's not even the ending of the movie. That's what's so weird about this movie. Like, I could not understand why they chose to end it on the scene that they ended. Like, mm-hmm. It made absolutely no sense, but somehow it still worked too, because like that duo was so good in the movie. Like, I really do think that they were as good of like a cop duo as I've seen in movies like this.
And they try to set up isn't it the school, the president of the school or something like that is the evil lesbian woman.
Yes. So
they try to make you think it's her possibly. And then, she gets got. So you're like, huh? But it's a solid movie. I didn't think it was great, but it was definitely enjoyable. And another fun little tidbit that I found out about this one, Uncle Bill, is Alfred Soule was originally attached to direct this movie. The guy that did Alice, Sweet Alice. That would have been
makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been really interesting because very similar movies, really.
Yeah. I mean, he did another one that's considered widely to be an American Giallo with Alice, Sweet Alice. And this is, to me, an American Giallo, just like right on the verge of being it. I love this movie. I'm not going to lie, because like I watched this a week ago. I think I watched it the day after we did the last one.
Right.
And I still remember. Yeah. I mean, that's a great. Yeah. I still remember everything about it. Like, and that's very unusual for me after I watch movies nowadays, because they just kind of come and go, and I've seen so many of them. I usually can't remember anything about them really, but this one is really well done. It's really the framing, the shots, the camera work, the suspense, the way that he sets up a lot of these murders is really, really, really well done. Now the twist at the ending, that was kind of bullshit. I didn't think it was great or anything.
I think they throw some drama in there too in this movie, and I can understand how it got lost in the shuffle. Really, it was not a hit when it came out. The death scenes in it, I guess the gimmick with the killer, he's got the motorcycle helmet on, has a weird looking type of knife that he
decapitates. It's like an old women. Like a some sort of African tribal knife or something, that, the kind that are kind of crooked, kind of looks like a boomerang in a way.
Yeah.
But Mark was talking about the blue. I would get the Blu-ray of this, and I thought about getting it, but it's like, I know somebody's going to release this. This is too good of a movie, like, for somebody else not to come along and release this.
where Scream Factory's doing so many Warner Brothers titles and stuff. I could see them maybe doing like a 4K of it or something too.
Yeah, I mean, we've got 4Ks of everything in the fucking world right now, so I'll eventually do this.
I mean, it's a solid movie. Like I said, I don't think it's great, but it's pretty good. But I can understand. Like, it was 1981. How many slasher movies came out in 1981? You could probably make an entire book about just 1981 slasher movies. But this one's pretty solid. If you want to check it out, I think it's on Tubi as well, if I'm not mistaken. It's on one of those streaming channels because that's how I watched it.
It's on, what the hell did I watch it on? I watched it on Amazon, I think.
Okay. Yeah, most of them, if you search, it about everything's available to watch somewhere. Usually it's Tubi. It's more obscure shit. But also wanted to let you guys know that we are doing the poll again for the best slasher film of the show.
I already know what's winning. Ain't no fun. See, that's the thing, though. A lot of times with these polls, I feel like people haven't seen the other movie. Like, because one of them is generally pretty well known and the other one is generally not. So,
well, I mean, it's going to be an interesting topic because I think the reason that The Mutilator is more well known is just because of one detail that they made sure to correct. Otherwise, it would be nobody know what the fuck this movie was. But anyway, Night School, 1981, 33% of the vote. The Mutilator, which we're going to be talking about next, is 67% of the vote. So we have over 100 people watching this on here, only 60 votes. So go over to the YouTube page and vote on it, Bulls. Make your voice heard and everything. It's the every vote counts, Uncle Bill, unlike the presidential election.
I was going to say, especially this year, every vote counts, Bulls.
Not in Kentucky.
I'm just going to tell you,
good old boys.
Real quick, right now, I'm just going to tell you something. There's already a million different conspiracy theories about all that shit, right? But regardless of whatever you believe, that happening and that pose that he did after it happened ensures, if there was ever any doubt that he's going to win this election, he's going to win that election after that. I 100% guarantee it. That was it. Bottom line.
It's one of those deals, though, that whoever wins, we all lose.
Yeah. I don't give a fuck about either one of them, honestly. They're both trash.
But anyway, you can hear about that. Like, goddamn, boys, they were covering that shit all night last night on every channel. I was excited. There's supposed to be a new fucking 48 hours on, and I had it on record. Nope. They were fucking talking about Donald Trump getting his fucking ear shot.
Man, there's people on both sides that think it's conspiracy. There's people that actually believe that his team or he somehow or another got somebody to act like they were going to shoot him so he could come off as a badass. And then there's people that believe that Biden and his team and like the CIA got people to try to shoot him. Either way, whoever did it, they fucked up because that guy got killed that shot him. And now he's even more like popular than he ever will be. So, or ever was before.
It is what it is. I try to not pay attention to any of this shit, but at any rate, something that y'all should pay attention to. Yeah. The Mutilator. We're going to talk about it from 1984, AKA Fall Break, which that was the theatrical name for this movie when it came out initially. Is there a worse name for a slasher movie than Fall Break, Uncle Bill?
Yeah. Do you want to know a secret? That might be worse.
I don't know. They're both pretty bad.
It like wasn't when I hear the name that got me. It was the poster. The Fall Break poster is one of the shittiest posters of all time.
I'll turn this inside out and I'll show you guys. Yeah. Cause so everybody, and that's what we were saying. Like, with these changes that they made, let's post it up, y'all.
Oh, there we go. So that's the Fall Break poster.
Look at that
Which is actually the original poster. And this is the Mutilator poster, which they changed the name. Like, yeah, this poster, man, is the reason.
That's the sailor.
Yeah.
The name, the poster. And when this came out on video, I think it was released unrated, right? Didn't they do an unrated and a rated version?
I believe so. On video.
So, you know, there's a lot of great gore sequences and stuff like that too. And this one is more along the lines of like a paint by number slasher movie. And I guess we'll go ahead and get started talking about it because, you know, it starts off years earlier. You got little Ed is trying to clean his daddy's guns for his birthday. He's all excited. It's his dad's birthday. And
yeah,
poor little Ed just accidentally blows his mom away with a double barrel shotgun.
I thought it was a rifle.
I thought it was a shotgun. I'm pretty sure it was a shotgun.
Okay.
Because he shot through the fucking wall.
Well, I mean, you could do that with a rifle. Like, there's just, I don't know.
There it is.
What gun it is, but it fucked her up.
I thought it was a double barrel shotgun. I may be wrong, but yeah. And then from that point on, you kind of get the impression that Big Ed was, you know, it kind of messed with Big Ed. He got his brains all scrambled up with hatred and everything and smacks the fuck out of his kid. So that's kind of like the prequel or the, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, part. And you fast forward to present day and Ed, you know, little Ed is away at college, but it's fall break, which I didn't know was a big thing. Oh, God, there's a spot. Uh-huh. And Big Ed calls and was like, I need you to come home to help me close up the beach house. And all of little Ed's generic friends go
they
along.
They are really generic.
To have a fun-filled weekend of getting butchered and violently mutilated by Big Ed.
Yep.
And what's even funnier is, do you remember we had a Big Ed here in Eastern Kentucky that sold sports cards, Uncle Bill?
I do remember that. Wasn't he in like the sundry store or something like that?
He was in Lane's Hardware, I think. I think he had a spot in Lane's Hardware. Big Ed sports cards and collectibles or something like that, which that's immediately what I thought of.
He could do that again now because they're probably more popular now than they were.
Well, I'd say Big Ed's probably dead at this point. I would imagine he was like an old man then, but who knows?
Is Big Ed dead?
Hello, I'm Big Ed.
Do you like baseball?
So this movie is, you know, like I said, paint by number slasher movie, lots of, well, and this cut too, this is the, Arrow Video cut that I watched where they had restored all the unrated, shots that they couldn't use in the theaters. And man, there is some really gory shit in this movie. I will put that over for sure. Creative death scenes starting off from pretty much the beginning, you know, he blows his mom away and blood and guts and shit's everywhere.
Mark Sjostrom did the special effects in this movie. And when I saw that, like, it made sense. Like, this is like one of the first films that he ever worked on. And he was a really good special effects guy. You remember the guy I'm talking about? Like, he looks like,
he's a real Geddy ugly Lee. Man.
Yeah, it's like Geddy Lee back in the 70s.
I definitely remember Mark Sjostrom because he's like, and he's a great effects guy. Done all kinds of killer shit, but damn, he's an ugly man. There's an ugly man that goes there.
That's exactly what I was thinking. But yeah, there's some really great death scenes in this movie. And that's actually one thing that separates it from a lot of other slashers that came along and, like, you know, had the same premise and everything, but just kind of fizzled out because the death scenes in this movie are fucking, they pay off. I'll say that.
They do.
And you know, another cool part about this movie was that it was filmed in North Carolina, I think Atlantic Beach. And
I've never been, that's one beach that I've never been to in North Carolina. I don't even know where the hell that's at.
There's another part too that it was filmed, like his hometown, Buddy Cooper's hometown or whatever. I forget the name of the place, but, it was all filmed, and Buddy Cooper was a lawyer. Is a lawyer. I don't know if he still is a lawyer or he was a lawyer, but he was a big shot, kind of like an Eric. From the impression I get from watching this, he's like an Eric C. Conn type in this place. Everybody knew him. Everybody knew about him. Like, all the locals knew him and everything.
Buddy Cooper's a fucking killer guy, too.
Yeah, he is. He's great.
He is a great guy. We first got speaking with him through the mail autograph thing. And back then, he was sending these one sheet posters back for like, I don't know how many he had, but we would get like autograph, like posters and stuff back from him and everything. It was fucking amazing.
Yeah. I don't think he had any idea that people were really into this movie. Really, I don't think he had that idea until probably Arrow contacted him about doing all these special features and stuff.
Yeah. We'll talk about that too.
Talk about that story in a minute.
Yeah. I do feel like Barry Horowitz sometimes, that we need to pat ourselves on the back because nobody else is going to.
Yep.
Sons of bitches. Dildos.
Bunch of shitheads.
But,
shithead casseroles.
Arrow did do an amazing job with this edition. This was many years. Well, this came out 2016. Never had a DVD release or anything up to that point. And it's good that they finally got it out, you know.
Still amazing too. Like, the quality of it and everything is top notch.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, there's a couple of questionable things in it though. That is kind of fun to talk about. And one that I think that you wanted to do a surprise, a super secret surprise for, is there's a song in this that Buddy Cooper, and I love the song too, but I don't know if anybody loved it more than Buddy Cooper, because literally the first 20 minutes of the movie, there is three different variations of this song that is played.
Well, yeah, it's playing at the beginning of the like movie when they're like sitting in a bar on the jukebox.
Right.
It's playing when they leave to go on the fall break, when they're in the car. It plays the whole fucking song. Like, he must have been infatuated with this song, like you were saying. The problem with this song to me is that there's two problems with it. Number one, it does not fit this movie whatsoever.
No.
Tonally or anything else.
It feels like a buddy comedy sort of song that would be in. They had like an instrumental piano slower version too. Did you hear that in it?
Yeah. Yeah. The other funny part about it is it's clearly done by a guy who fucking loves Billy Joel. And is trying to rip off Billy Joel with everything in him.
Well, yeah, Billy Joel's one of the best of all time.
And I just think it's like one of the funniest fucking songs ever.
Gonna have a good time. So,
hold on. There's something. Hold on.
He's going to have to go murder somebody himself. But, the Mutilator, yeah, Rambo likes the Mutilator.
Fuck, I'll be right back.
Okay. All right, but we'll pause things until Uncle Bill gets back, and I'll go in the chat here. I think somebody's trying to shit on his porch or something. The Mutilator... I think the Mutilator artwork is a big reason that people know the Mutilator, love the Mutilator, because, and that was a very important part of 80s and video stores and stuff, was the artwork. But the difference is the Mutilator did kind of deliver. Like, it wasn't one of those deals where, you know, it was only the poster art, and there was plenty of those. But yeah, the by hook, by axe, by pick, bye-bye. Here comes the Mutilator, boss. There is naked women in the movie. There is. Black Peter. I bought a Mutilator VHS a couple of years ago. It was a cut box, but it's cheap, and I figured, why not? Yeah, it's a good one to have, for sure. Jackson Jack says the Mutilator looks more like his speed. Princess Puffins is, I don't think, she's probably not a fan of the Mutilator. And it's interesting because they have, and we'll probably talk about this too, because Vanderhoff brought it up. if we'd heard anything about, oh no, let's just, the Mutilator 2. I've seen the trailer for the Mutilator 2. It does not look good. God bless Buddy Cooper. He's finally making another movie. But the Mutilator 2 is, I'm in fear that it's not going to be very good. It doesn't look that great to me. Now, I could be mistaken. I've been wrong. I have been wrong before. And I'll admit it when I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But it does not look good to me. Yeah, it was, I don't know what the deal is with it. I think they're still screening it, doing theatrical screenings here and there in North Kakalaki. Rambo says Mutilator 2 looks like it costs $3 and a box of Cracker Jacks to make. Yeah, I mean, it did. I agree with you. It reminded me of, I've already popped a melatonin, Jackson Jack. It reminds me of the Dark Knight of the Scarecrow 2. I mean, hopeful to God it's better than that, but I don't know. I don't have much faith in it, to be honest with you. I think the Mutilator probably could be a Tubi original, but just barely. Like the Terror Train remake was, and they made a sequel to the Terror Train remake. So if it's not as good as either of those, man, what is Buddy Cooper even doing? But yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird because this was 1984. Buddy Cooper has not made any other movies or anything since then. And he finished the sequel to Mutilator last year. So it kind of reminds me of I Spit on Your Grave Deja Vu as well. Stuntman. Yeah, it don't look good. Vanderhoff said he couldn't find distribution. I mean, there's got to, out of all the streaming channels and stuff, there's got to be somewhere that would purchase it for the right money. Maybe he's wanting too much money for it. Who's to say? I don't know where you would continue with Mutilator, the Mutilator story. I think it still has the same cast or a lot of the same cast in it. The Mutilator 2 is 1984. Fall break 2. What's funny is the Arrow Blu-ray of the Mutilator, the introduction and the title sequence and everything says Fall Break. So that's kind of odd. I thought that was kind of odd. Like, you know, it's not, even though that was the original name for it, people know it as the Mutilator, but it is what it is. Meemaw is the new Mutilator. Funny how low budget movies back in the 80s actually still look like movies. Low budget movies now don't even resemble an actual movie. Yeah. I mean, I think that's why you're seeing like an influx of just shitty independent movies, because now essentially you can film them on your phone. Whereas back then you know, to use film and the big cameras and lights and everything, you had to invest a lot of money in that. But anymore, you know, these cameras now don't even really need light that much. Don't give them any ideas, Jackson Jack.
Is everything okay? Yeah, there's an emergency situation with the dog. Apparently, they thought it was lost. I'm like, anybody yell for it or anything?
Did it just lock itself in the bathroom or something?
No, it was literally just like behind the couch eating something and didn't want to come out.
Oh God, the dog's gone.
That dog's gone out of the house. I'm like, how the fuck dog get out of the house? Can't open
the door. Is it that new Goofy one you all got? What was his name?
Yeah, oh, it's Romeo. I call it Romero.
Call him Goofy.
He is the
Goofy. He have his tongue sticking out all the
time. I swear to God, he looks like Luke from Bushwhackers. He's like looking.
All right, but yeah, I mean, I was just going through the chat here.
What were you saying?
People were talking about Mutilator 2. Everybody's excited about seeing it on Tubi or wherever it's going to debut at. I don't know. I'm not too excited about it myself.
I don't think it'll ever come out. Like, if anybody's got any sense, it won't.
I'm sure somebody will bring it out, even if it's like Terror Vision or one of those Vinegar Syndrome partner labels will bring it out on something. I'm convinced it'll probably sell out.
It looks like the awfulest thing ever. That trailer's.
It does. But what I was going to mention though, before you had to go and search for Romeo, Oh Romeo, mm-hmm. was the pool scene in this, which is the first scene where a couple of the teenagers is the weirdest setup ever, because I think it's an outdoors pool and they have tarps and shit up over it. I don't understand I don't understand that. I don't know why they did that, but anyway, whatever. So this couple, Mike and Linda, who they look for throughout the rest of the damn movie, they're gone the first 20 minutes of the movie. And then an hour later, they're still fucking looking for Mike and Linda.
Yep.
But
that is true. I didn't really think about it, but that's really the whole like premise of the movie. After they get there,
come on, go out there and get Mike and Linda.
They've been missing for 2 days, but shit.
The comedic relief guy who's fucking awful, Ralph or something like that was his name.
God.
He gets sent out. Come on, get Mike and Linda in the house before you lock up. Like they're fucking dogs or something.
His dancing is killer though. And he's one of the ones that like talks like us. He's like, hey, boy, we gotta go out and fall.
Fuck everybody.
There's two guys in this movie who really have like strong North Carolina accents. And they're like, yeah.
But anyway, back to the death sequence for Mike and Linda. Linda's the first one that gets got.
Yeah.
But they're both in the pool together.
Right.
Okay. And it's not a very big pool. You know, it's not even as big as like Archer Park pool. Not an Olympic size pool at all. But so Big Ed is secretive enough to, while they're both in the pool together, take all of his clothes off and sneak in the fucking pool to kill Linda and drag her body out of the pool without being seen at all by Mike. I don't know what the fuck Mike was doing over there. Was he playing with his bird or something or what?
He was trying to get him something. He might've been, you know, warming it up.
Okay. But I was like
doing a little test tickle. You know what I mean?
So Big Ed is supposed to be this like older man at this point anyway, like 50. Why would he just not have like his regular clothes on in the swimming pool? Like he's got time to take his fucking clothes off and go. Oh, it's just so weird.
It's a good point. I really don't. There's a lot of things in this movie that really don't make a lot of sense. Like Rambo was saying, if the dad was so mad at the son for killing his mom, aka the dad's wife, why did the dad wait until he was a teen to get revenge? Like,
maybe his hatred was just brewing up until, you know.
Yeah. You really can't kill a kid in a movie, so you got to be able to try to kill a teen.
I did like the fact that Big Ed was kind of an alcoholic. Like, to me, that's kind of realistic. Like, just a hateful old fucking man that finally snaps. So, yeah, when they get there in the house and everything, and the house is evidently still there, by the way. If you go on IMDb, there's an address to the beach house where you could go and visit if you're ever in the Atlantic Beach area, which I'm sure some people went. But anyway, we were talking about the song, Uncle Bill, the Fall Break song, which they still used, even though it was retitled The Mutilator on home video.
Yeah.
Of course they didn't have a choice. They had to use it. It's in like 35, 40 minutes of the movie.
The guy that did the song too, like, was apparently a pretty decent songwriter that knew a bunch of like other songwriters that were, you know, big time guys and stuff like that. I cannot remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but he's got his own like featurette on this disc too, where he talks about the song. I can't believe that though, because that song is just so fucking goofy.
It is,
but it's one of those songs, man, that will get stuck in your head. If you watch this movie, and it might be because it's on the menu screen and it's in the movie like three times.
Michael Menard.
Yes, you cannot get away from this fucking song in this movie, but it gets stuck in your head and will never part. Like, you'll just be going around singing it. So much so that I have been singing it, and I just wanted to...
How it go?
I wanted to bring it to you guys. It was a special... performance. Watching this show, yeah. Y'all ready? Now when the leaves of summer turn a red and gold, and the football games bring a hint of the cold, time to get away. We'll pack the car with escape in mind, forgetting about classes, leaving books behind, time to get away. An empty cottage sitting on the shore, tourists that left about a month before, and we're gonna have a good time.
Gonna have a good time.
We're gonna have a good time.
Cause it's gonna be a
fall break, walking hand in hand in the moonlight. Smell the sweet salt day. I swear we'll never part. Going on a fall break, and then the sand feeling all right. If you fall into my arms, I'll break into your heart.
There you go. There's gonna be a fall break.
There's so many like vocal fucking things in that song too. Like, it's not just that guy singing. There's like a whole trio of people like doing these little vocal things throughout the whole thing too.
We do have a semi pre-recorded one that'll pop up on Patreon that's a little bit more on time, because there's really no way to other than do just a solo version of a song on here. But yeah, it is a catchy song, I'll say that.
So that's the song. Like, if you can imagine in like what's supposed to be a hardcore slasher film, where y'all are right, like 90% of the time they have like a metal song like in the film. That's
it's thank like you, Rambo.
That's the theme song.
Gonna have a good time.
Gonna have a good time.
That you wanna be a
fall break. Walking hand in hand in the moonlight.
All right. Oh yeah. But yeah, it's a high recommendation for me. If you have not seen this movie, this Arrow edition is amazing. The video quality on this is unreal. I'm sure at some point they'll probably do a 4K of it. It doesn't need it. It looks great. Special features are awesome. There's a feature length documentary on it. And the interesting thing is, and I wasn't expecting it, but I would have been pleasantly surprised if we had any special thanks in the documentary or anything at all. But no, Uncle Bill, it didn't happen.
No. Which is, you know, par for the course for us, really. But
what's funny is the guy that directed that documentary is the very guy that we hooked Buddy Cooper up with.
Yes. But that documentary is really great, though.
It is.
Honestly. Because, like, it covers every aspect of that movie, and you've got everybody from the movie still there, with the exception of maybe like
Big Ed was still alive, even. Lord yeah, God.
Big Ed was in there. And they just, I mean, they go through the whole thing from the special effects to the music to Buddy Cooper talking about how it was made and why it was made and all that. And that, it's just, this is a great Blu-ray release.
There's one particular death scene in this too that is insanely gruesome. That's where they actually use the hook.
Yeah.
We'll just say that. I mean, I don't know how much you want to say, but that, God that's a
rough,
bless.
That's a rough scene, man.
That's fucking hardcore as hell.
And they've got like a, I noticed this time when I was watching it, like the precursor to that scene is like when he's at his dad's house or whatever, and they showing him that hook, and he tells him what it is and, you know, what it's for and everything. And then it shows up like later in the film as one of the things that he uses. So essentially, I don't know how else to say this. He like uses it on one of the women in an unpleasant way. How about that?
Violently.
And there is like
decapitations, yeah. Like chainsaw scene. There's all kinds of like insane shit in this. But it's a well-made slasher movie too. Like for somebody that didn't have that much experience making a movie, it looked good. It looked like a big budget production, really, didn't you think? I mean, it starred people that weren't experienced. You could kind of, I don't think any of these guys went on to do anything. And I was going to try to pick up.
Except the, I mean, the only guy that I know that went on to do really anything, and it wasn't much, was the lead guy, the guy that was like the son.
Yeah. Matt Mittler or something like that.
Yeah. And he did
a couple other things.
But yeah, nothing. He did a couple of movies. He did, I think, was it Dead Time Stories? I think
I'm not sure. I've got an autograph of his from years and years ago that is on one of those fall break lobby cards, but I don't know where it's at. I couldn't find it.
But yeah.
Yeah. I think we had wrote to him back in the day too, but I mean, everybody does decent enough job in it, and it's not like one of those movies, like, you know, we were talking about, Death Screams or Final Judgment or whatever. Whereas like, you can tell that none of these people had any clue what in the fuck they were doing at all. And this was his first movie, Buddy Cooper. So he really didn't have, I mean, I don't know how he would have had much of an idea what he was doing, but he pulled it off and it looked more believable than those other movies to me.
Yeah. I love it because number one, like it has another movie that has a real Southern kind of vibe to it because of the accents and a lot of the set locations and stuff too. But also the special effects and the death scenes in it are insanely good. I'll say that, like almost every one of them is memorable. Like, every kill in this movie is memorable for some reason. Whether it be the one with the hook or the one with the one that gets me for some reason is it's not really a death scene per se, but it's at the end where they killed him and he fucking hacks that guy's leg off with the fucking.
Well, he is like, they tear his torso off. Yeah. So it's half of him there on the beach, but he still has that, that axe and has enough power left in him to cut the
dude's leg off. He's just dying laughing after he cuts this guy's leg off. And that's
then he dies.
He just dies. Oh, it reminds me of Pieces in that way, where like you think it's over, but it's not over.
Yeah, I mean, it's got some goofy stuff in it. It's fun. It's entertaining all the way through. And for both of these movies that we talk about today, both of these are under 90 minutes. It's the perfect length for an 80s slasher movie, in my opinion. And even horror movies back then, for some reason, there's a real problem today with any of these fucking filmmakers making anything 90 minutes or less. It all has to be almost 2 hours in length, and most of them always suck.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. I don't know when that started or why it started, but like a slasher movie never really needs to be 2 hours. And we're looking at you, fucking deja vu. Like, it never, ever needs to be over 2 hours, because the majority of slasher movies in the 80s didn't really have a plot other than a group of kids were going to get together and they were going to get killed one by one. So what the hell do you need
killed
2 hours to go through? Like, you just have the basic setup.
And what's your shirt, Uncle Bill?
Oh, this is the Murder Set Pieces shirt that I got 20 years ago.
You could probably sell that on eBay, because anything Murder Set Pieces is worth money now, because for some reason that Nick Palumbo has disappeared and that movie hasn't been released in 20 years or longer on anything.
I really don't know what happened to that guy. I would love to know the backstory behind him.
No idea. But yeah, I mean, I guess that is the show. We're going to go in and check and see where the poll is, and then we'll talk about what we're doing next week. But yeah, I mean, pretty handedly, the Mutilator wins 62% of the vote to 38% of the vote. So that wins best of show. I'll go ahead and end it. It's not really too close.
Jack Owen says, check my poll. That's killing. Anyway.
Jack, you quit being vulgar, sir.
That's actually closer than I thought it would be. I thought it would be like a landslide for the Mutilator, but yeah.
Totally 95 votes, baby. So appreciate everybody voting. And whenever we get to the tail end of this, we will do a best of the year or best of the season or whatever. I don't know what we'll call it. But that brings us to next week, Uncle Bill. You want to talk about a couple of the movies we're going to be reviewing for the, what would it be, the fifth week of the Cruel Summer Slashback. All summer long, Bill. It's going to be huge.
Yeah, so next week, this is going to be an interesting one because I don't think two movies could be like more different than these two that we're going to talk about. But one of them is very near and dear to our hearts because the guy that's in it looks just like a guy that's around here that fixes carburetors. So that's Slaughterhouse.
Right.
We'll be talking about that one.
It's been a long time since I've seen Slaughterhouse. So this will be the first time I'm watching the Vinegar Syndrome Blu-ray, which will be interesting.
And then the other one is one that people have been trying to convince me to watch ever since that I think it was Kino Lorber had a sale on this. And I've never got around to watching it for whatever reason, but I've heard a million different people say that it's great. So I finally decided just to put it on the show, and this will be the first time that I've actually seen it. And that is Nightmare Beach,
Left plastered up there, baby. We got Buddy has an axe to grind, a big axe in Slaughterhouse. And can you pronounce that guy's name?
Which one?
I know it's directed by Harry Kirkpatrick. That couldn't be his fucking real name.
This is Italian, I think.
La Spagna del Terror.
It ain't gonna be Harry Kirkpatrick. It's gotta be like be Bertil Lindsay or one of them guys that did this.
Well, he could be like the Irish Italian guy, maybe.
That's true. I guarantee that's
gonna be a hell of a show, man. I've got like a small list of stuff that I definitely want to try to get in, and Slaughterhouse was on that list. And then Nightmare Beach is one that I don't think I've ever seen Nightmare Beach.
Yeah, so, this will be the first time I watched it, but like I've had so many people recommend it that I could not watch it. Plus, Michael Parks is in Nightmare Beach. I didn't know that either, but he's got like a fairly decent role in it and like one of his earlier roles.
Ooh, Umberto Lindsay made Nightmare Beach. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yep. It had to be somebody like that. I knew.
I thought it was Harry Kirkpatrick. I was thinking all along that's who it was.
But out of all the shit Umberto Lindsay has made, that's the one he didn't want to claim.
So
Nightmare Beach.
So what we've got planned too, and we're not going to give it away on this show. Everybody will know about it next week. But after the live show tonight, I'm going to dig in and tell you guys what the 28th of July, what we're going to be reviewing for that on the Discord. So you'll get to hear a week ahead of time tonight if you go on the Discord. If you're not on there yet and you're on the Patreon page, I will put the link up after the show as well so you can join the Discord and get on there and talk to pretty much everybody. It's like a modern-day message board, kind of. So we will talk about that on there tonight. But, yeah, I guess that is it. Anything else you wanted to mention on here, Uncle Bill? You got a lot of shows to talk about this week.
No, I mean, ain't nothing I can think of, really.
I think the next thing we're going to do, and I was thinking about this, and I didn't even mention it to you. I don't know if you're available on Thursday night. It's been a while since we've done a horror roundtable show. So I was thinking of maybe doing that on Thursday night, if you can make it.
No.
Well, I guess we ain't going to.
Fuck you. Fuck you, I ain't doing it.
What are you going to be busy doing? Licking them dogs' asses?
God damn it. I'm going to have you lick my ass. How about that?
Come here, Romeo.
Buddy.
That's clean your that, butt.
That ain't even right. I mean, I guess we can do a round. Listen, if we do another fucking round table, though, people need to quit being pussies about it and show up. People that have not done a round table, show up.
That's true.
I can't stand. People will get on here in this chat and be like, oh, God, let me tell you about this, and this, and why you're wrong about this, and this. Well, now's your chance. Show up to this round table. Get on there and show your face and your ass. Let's do it.
Those are Google warriors. Google warriors. They look everything up on Google. They don't know shit. Google's their best friend, and IMDb.
If there's one thing I can't stand is people that are like, well, actually, blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. Well, now's a chance, dickhead. Get on there.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how good you are on the fly with the ballers and shot callers, boys. We can verbally eviscerate people, Uncle Bill. That's the skill that we've got.
To verbally eviscerate people?
Yes.
I mean, I guess that is a skill set.
We can make you cry. I guess that's it. Yeah. But next week, again, wanted to mention on here, it's going to be a fun show. Nightmare Beach and Slaughterhouse for the Cruel Summer Slashback. We're going to continue it on. Hopefully we can get one in every week throughout July and August and see how many we got. And then at the end, we might do like a ranking show, maybe a tiers show or something. I don't know. We'll see.
We haven't done a tiers show in forever, and I can't figure out why. We need
Hey, to. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
You son of a bitch, do one.
So, appreciate everybody joining us and everything. And you want to play us out with another song?
My special edition of this song. Fall break, and hand in hand, feeling all right. When you break into my house, I'll fall into your ass. Good night, everybody.